Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The We Supply America bus tour takes off. On board, Labor Secretary Walsh talking up infrastructure needs in the state of Ohio. And today on the show, the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades District Council 6. Welcome to the Tuesday, August 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Melissa Cropper is going to be our first guest on the show today. She's one of our regulars, also a proud sponsor of the show, oh.aft.org. And we're at that time of the year where we're talking about going back to school. Back to school with a pandemic that is far from being over. And today we're going to talk about how the unions are all working hard to make sure that students in the state of Ohio have a safe and orderly return to school despite what's going on with the uptick in cases due to the Delta variant. Number one, masks. The OFT has consistently said that CDC guidance should be the floor for all school district safety guidelines. And the CDC has recommended universal indoor masking for all teachers, staff, students, and visitors from K through 12, no matter if you're vaccinated or not. Now, on to the vaccines. The American Federation of Teachers, the parent union, passed a resolution on vaccines in schools. And let me just go over that real quick, citing an 84% rise in coronavirus-infected children in the first week of August. The AFT board formally endorse working with school systems on mandatory vaccines to help ensure schools open safely for teachers, students, and staffers. Now, this resolution just came down on August 11th, and it follows up on comments by Randy Weingarten, president of the AFT, days before endorsing mandatory vaccination for teachers and staff. The National Education Association, another big teachers union, also reports that more than 90% of teachers are fully vaccinated. The AFT says vaccine deniers are the big part of the problem. And this is a comment from Randy. The polarized political climate and ongoing vaccine misinformation campaigns created troubling resistance to vaccination that has led to more than 40% of Americans remaining unvaccinated, and thereby an intense surge in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in many communities. And I'll tell you, it's really bad in the South. Florida, Texas, Alabama, Louisiana. I mean, really, really serious down there. So that's essentially what we're going to talk about with Melissa as our first guest. Jeff Mierhoff will be joining us as our second guest on the show. And Jeff currently serves as the business manager, secretary treasurer for the Painters and Allied Trades District Council 7. Now, they represent about 1,900 members in Wisconsin and part of Michigan in the finishing trades, which includes commercial, industrial, and residential painting sectors, drywall finishing, and commercial glazing. And District Council 7 has 9 locals, 108, 579, 770, 781, 802, 934, 941, 1011, and 1204. What we're going to get into, number one, is COVID and its effect on their members, especially because of the trade industry. Now, the painters and allied trades, when there's a trade show going on, more often than not, the locals are going to bring in the painters and allied trades, We'll talk about that. We'll talk about organizing during the pandemic. It's my understanding they have a new director of organizing. We'll touch on that. Misclassification of workers. This is a huge topic. I can't talk enough about this, especially in the construction industry, primarily in the finishing trades, including drywall finishing and painting. So we'll touch on that. More importantly, what are we going to do about it? I know a lot of law firms are taking this on, progressive law firms, but boy, this is tough. It's really tough. Website is IUPATDC7.com. That's our website, IUPATDC7.com. They're also on Facebook and on Twitter. So Jeff Mierhoff will be our second guest on the show. Well, yesterday was a big day. Talking infrastructure, Labor Secretary Marty Walsh and Tom Conway, who's president of the United Steelworkers, kicked off the Steelworkers' We Supply America bus tour to advocate for the current congressional infrastructure bill. The tour partly hopes to highlight the connection between infrastructure investment and good-paying steelworker jobs. Starting at USW Local 6787, their union hall in Chesterton, Indiana, the We Supply America campaign will visit union halls in sites including Ohio, West Virginia, Virginia, North Carolina, as well as Pennsylvania, all very, very key states that need to improve their infrastructure. And speaking of which, Marty Walsh, our labor secretary, is in Ohio today talking with state and local community leaders and workers about the Biden-Harris administration's historic investments in the bipartisan infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better agenda. Here's a rundown. Walsh will first join Lieutenant Governor John Houston and Representatives Marcy Kaptur and Bob Latta for a tour and media conference in Wallbridge, Ohio, at a new First Solar factory, the company's third, that's in Northwest Ohio, where production of eco-efficient solar panels will generate hundreds of jobs and enough panels to power over a half million homes, 570,000 to be exact. That's pretty darn good. Walsh is then traveling south to Dayton, where he's meeting up with Mayor Nan Whaley. They're going to visit the Dayton Job Corps Center, meet with students before touring the facility, then head on to On Purpose Academy, a childhood mentoring and learning center, where they'll meet with care workers, advocates, and unions on the need for federal investments in child, elder, and disability care and paid leave. It's the entire whole family agenda that they're dealing with in this administration, from birth all the way to senior status. That's what they're trying to do when they build back better. This agenda includes investments in workforce development, funding for support care centers, and care workers' wages. Got to bring the wages up. I want to mention here, the White House released an updated fact sheet highlighting the impact of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. And if you go to the Labor Department, just Google United States Labor Department, and you could check to see what's going on in all 50 states. And since we originate this show out of the state of Ohio, I'm going to run down the state of Ohio, where civil engineers gave Ohio a C-minus grade on its infrastructure report card. Actually, that's better than in years past. I mean, a lot of areas were D minus. Let's look at roads and bridges. Repair and rebuild roads and bridges will focus on climate change mitigation, equity and safety for all users, including cyclists and pedestrians. In Ohio, there are 1,377 bridges and over 4,925 miles of highway, all in poor condition. And if you go back to 2011, 10 years, commute times have increased by 5.7% in Ohio, and on average, each driver pays $506 per year in costs due to driving on roads in need of repair. So we are essentially paying for bad infrastructure. Bad infrastructure. I mean, over 10 years, I mean, that was a 10-year period. You're looking at $5,000 in repair to your car. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act is the single largest dedicated bridge investment since the construction of the interstate highway system. We're going back to what, the 1950s? I mean, that's when the highway system started. There's more here. Improve healthy, sustainable transportation options for millions of Americans. Ohioans who take public transportation spend an extra 75.9% of their time commuting, and non-white households are 5.9 times more likely to commute via public transportation. And 25% of transit vehicles in the state are past their useful life. And this bill will put a whole lot more money into public transit. There's another issue here, and that's clean drinking water. We all need good water. And this bill will deliver clean drinking water to every American and eliminate the nation's lead service lines and pipes. Listen to this number. Right now, there's up to 10 million American households and 400,000 schools and child care centers lacking safe drinking water in the richest country of the world. High-speed internet, we touched on that with the CWA, $65 billion would go into that. Again, if you go to Labor Department, just Google U.S. Labor Department, in every state, there is a rundown of what's going to happen under this legislation. And that's just the start. I know the Biden-Harris administration wants to do more. One more here before we break. The presidents of the United Food and Commercial Workers, along with the CWA, Communication Workers, and the UAW, have all announced that their unions are resigning from the board of the National Consumers League. Why? Because the league is being funded by Amazon. The unions claim that Amazon's funding of the nation's oldest consumer advocacy organization has compromised its progressive mission, and that the National Consumers League has prioritized anti-worker donations ahead of its pro-labor commitment. The board chair is a rep from the Service Employees International Union, and one of the vice chairs is from the AFL-CIO, and neither have commented yet on the other union's departures. That's one to watch. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, Melissa Cropper of the Ohio Federation of Teachers.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without iron workers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained iron workers and 20,000 apprentices, the Iron Workers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skyline. Lines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. I was mentioning the Steelworkers Tour along with the Labor Secretary Marty Walsh. You can follow them at the hashtag USWMade. They're in the state of Ohio today. They're going throughout the Midwest. And it's all about supplying America. You want to rebuild the infrastructure. Supply it with American-made goods and products, okay? Let's go that route. And the steelworkers are very, very adamant about that. Again, just follow them at USWMade. Scott Paul, who's with the Alliance for American Manufacturing, who's been a frequent guest on the show, is also on that bus tour. So we'll have to link up with him down the road. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, also a proud sponsor. I'm talking about Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, OFT.AFT.org. And here we are in the middle of August. Kids are going back to school, and the importance here, they have to be safe. Hey, Melissa, welcome back. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, glad to be back.
So let's set the rules here as far as how schools are going to reopen, at least in the state of Ohio. I know down south there's some governors who think differently about the Delta variant, but maybe you can bring us up to speed on how things are going to work or hopefully work out. I know there might be some pushback on masks, and I know there's a mandate for teachers to get the vaccine, but why don't you just run down what's going on right now, Melissa?
Sure. Yeah, in Ohio, actually, there are not any statewide mandates. There's a high recommendation for both vaccines and masks, but decisions are being made on a local level. So we, of course, are highly, highly encouraging people to get vaccinated and highly, highly encouraging the mask wearing and social distancing. And we do have a lot of districts throughout the state who have imposed mask mandates, such as Cleveland, Cincinnati, Toledo, a lot of the larger school districts, but it's not a statewide mandate.
Okay, I know that mandate, that's a tough word. That's a really tough word, and they want to fight back on that. But where are we with teachers? I'm reading, and I don't know if you have done any polling, but National, Randy Weingarten, the president of the AFT, says that more than, 84 to 90% of the teachers are vaccinated. Is that pretty accurate in the state of Ohio, to your knowledge?
Well, again, it's going to vary from place to place. I'm not sure what the overall average is, but we know that a majority of our teachers have been vaccinated. And we're thankful that teachers were prioritized back in the spring for the vaccination. That was critical for getting us back in school safely. And a large majority of our teachers have taken advantage of that and are vaccinated at this point in time.
What about the schools? And I'm just wondering, going back to schools, are the schools safe to go into? I know some of them have upgraded ventilation systems, some do not. What's your take on that right now?
Right. Again, we're fortunate that the federal government put a lot of money into schools and that we were able to use some of that money to make our schools safer. So just as you indicated, upgrading our ventilation systems, making sure there's the proper cleaning supplies in place, doing things to allow better physical distancing between students. So, we feel like we are just in a much, much different place than we were this time last year or even, back in January of this year. Now, of course, we got a new strain of the virus to deal with now, but with the vaccines, if people wear masks, if we follow the safe social distancing, if people are smart about staying home when they're sick, we feel like we can be back in school normal, face-to-face, and we're excited about doing them.
What about, like, temperature checks? Is that happening? And obviously, you know, the kids can't get the vaccine yet. It's only for 12 and over. So, I mean, well, there's a lot of kids 12 and over in schools, let's be honest here. But what about any kind of temperature checks or anything like that? Is that going to be happening in various districts?
It possibly could be happening in some districts. Again, it's going to vary from place to place depending on what the local decides that they need. But, yeah, I mean, there are some testing protocols, you know, Battelle Memorial has a testing program out that will allow you to do random testing of students and staff on a regular basis to make sure you're catching any strains that come out. But I think that's something that's going to continue to evolve as we see what happens with the Delta variant and if we need to put more protocols in place.
Melissa, if you can, I want to get into more with the parent union of the OFT. I'm talking about the American Federation of Teachers. And in fact, I saw Randy Weingarten on Meet the Press a couple of weeks ago talking about the fact that they passed a resolution dealing with mandatory vaccinations to help ensure that schools open safely for teachers. Now, the relationship that they have, I mean, you followed their lead. Can you be a little more specific on how that rolls out? Because there's a lot of locals, a lot of different parts of America that see things differently. But maybe if you can speak to that.
Sure. So I'm actually an AFT vice president. So I serve both on the executive council at the AFT level, and I'm also on the executive committee, which is more the advisory committee to President Weingarten. So these were, you know, very serious, very in-depth conversations about what do we do about mandatory vaccines. Because as you indicated, you know, opinions vary about this across the country. We know some people were eager to get the vaccine. We also know that some people, whether it's for medical reasons or religious reasons or other reasons, have decided not to get the vaccine at this point in time. So the decision that we came up with, the resolution that we voted on and accepted, is that we will work with school districts to make sure our schools are as safe as possible. And if a district chooses to mandate a vaccine, then we'll work with them on the implementation of that and make sure that people are treated fairly in the process. So if they do have, you know, a medical or religious reason for not getting that vaccine, then we'll make sure that's not held against them, that they're not punished in any way for that. But also, I think the more important part of that resolution to me, the part that I weighed in very heavily on, is that we need to continue our education process of encouraging people to get voluntary vaccines and to make sure we put information in front of people, that we listen to people about what their reasons are for not getting a vaccine, and that we do everything that we can to make sure people have all the information they need to make that very important decision.
Lay out the information and let's be civil about it. I know there's there's some areas in the country where parents have been in major conflict with boards, but it's good to see that the things seem to be kind of normal in the state of Ohio. I'm just wondering, it's kind of early in the game right now. I know
it's
some
early
schools.
We're getting different reports from different types of places. I mean, there are places in the state that where people are fighting against the mask wearing. Again, I'll go back to our resolution. The important part I left out is that we have said that in cases where people are not vaccinated, that they should be wearing masks and being tested on a regular basis. So I just think we've got to do what we can to keep our students safe and to keep our communities safe. And if we want our children to be back in school, which, you know, I think we heard loud and clear that's where students need to be, and we firmly believe that, then we've got to take some precautions. And if you're concerned about taking a vaccine, then at least wear a mask and be tested on a regular basis so we can make sure the circumstances are safe. I mean, this is about more than are you uncomfortable wearing a mask. This is about keeping people safe and trying to return to normal as soon as possible.
And these are what can be referred to as common sense measures. I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, if you're not vaccinated, wear the mask. And we didn't ask for this pandemic. We're trying to navigate through it. And we're trying to keep our kids safe, and that's what it's all about. All right. Anything else there that you want to call attention to? I mean, this has got to be tough for you as the president of the state federation. And we got how many school boards in the state of Ohio? Isn't it like 600 or something like that?
Over 600, 618 plus. That's just your traditional K-12 schools. You've got another 300 charter schools in there, and who knows how many private schools. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot to monitor, and obviously the bottom line here is to keep everybody safe and let's get them learning again. That's what it's all about, and keep them learning. All right, real good. We're going to leave it on that note. Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Website is oh.aft.org. They're also on Facebook, OFT Union, and you could follow them on Twitter at OFT Advocate. Very good. You take care. You stay safe. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to check into next month, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 7 out of Wisconsin and Michigan. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 5 different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go to line number 2 right now. And welcome to the show, Mr. Jeff Mayerhoff. Jeff currently serves as the business manager and secretary treasurer for IUPAT. That's the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 7. And he's had that position since 2016. Got involved in the union 25 years ago. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
So you got involved in the union, what was it, 1996? Just wondering, were you encouraged to go by your parents, your fellow, maybe somebody you went to high school with? I'm just wondering why you got involved, because more and more people are getting involved, especially in the trades, because we need them. What's sure. your story, Jeff?
Absolutely. Well, back in mid-90s, I was working in painting, drywall trade, non-union in Wisconsin. And my best friend at the time, he had started as an apprentice in our apprenticeship programs in Madison. And he was talking to me for a while about it and trying to get me to make the jump over to being a union painter. So it took me a little bit to kind of decide that's what I, wanted to do. And, I finally made the choice and I applied, was hired on by a union contractor, became an apprentice, and, you know, started the program and kind of been here ever since.
Rest is history. Real good. Absolutely. And you moved up the ranks over the years. So you're in the Wisconsin and I guess parts of Michigan, pretty big territory then?
Yeah, we got a pretty good jurisdiction, pretty big, covering almost all of Wisconsin, except for a tiny tiny portion up in northwest near kind of Superior, Duluth area. That's you know, by another district council, District Council 82, my counterpart in Minnesota. Otherwise, yeah, we have all of Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So we have a pretty big geographic area.
I see the website is iupatdc7.com, and on there you'll see nine locals make up District Council 7. So how's the workload going on there, especially with this pandemic going on?
It's busy. You know, it's the funny thing about how COVID affected different regions of the country, I think. You know, for us, we didn't really slow down necessarily. We didn't have huge numbers of our members being laid off and, you know, out of work. It didn't really affect us that way, you know, as opposed to some of, you know, my brothers out in like the East Coast, especially Boston, New York area. You know, they were off for months. We didn't see that. And we haven't really slowed down, you know, necessarily since then. One portion of my membership, a local 770 members, they're sign and display workers, show floor trade show workers. They haven't been working, you know, basically since March of 2020 when everything kind of shut down. They still haven't returned. But from our construction side, we've been, you know, we really haven't stopped.
Now, what did they do since they lost? You know, I know the trade shows, and I think some of the trade shows are starting to pick up right now.
So, yeah, I mean, we started to see a little bit. It's kind of fits back and forth, you know, where you'll see a show and it'll go. You know, we had a auto show in Milwaukee area earlier this year. We got some guys back. But a lot of them, you know, I think that they've, you know, been on collecting the additional benefits through unemployment. A lot of them we've been trying to transition into, you know, maybe the construction trades. Some of them are just, you know, just kind of sit waiting and trying to, you know, get back to what they do. But it's, you know, it's kind of out of our hands. So we're hoping, you know, we can get a handle on this pandemic and you start to see trade shows getting booked and we can get our people back.
What about the apprenticeship programs? I know a lot of them went virtual during the during the shutdown from last year. What's the status of that right now?
Well, like I said, when everything started shutting down, you know, last year, we stopped as well because, you know, we wanted to make sure, first of all, we keep our members safe. And we were shut down, I think, started probably in March, you know, April, May, June. We started back up virtually I think it was June. So we kind of brought people back, you know, through Zoom. I think it's what we were using. And we had that interruption, that pause, but we got them back. You know, they didn't really miss, you know, they didn't miss a lot of, you know, class time. We were able to keep them going. I think the big thing that is they didn't get the hands-on portion. That's all, you know, that's the other half of our apprenticeship. So, you know, they lost a little bit there, but we've been basically back the full time, you know, in classroom and our hands-on portion since August of last year. We haven't, you know, we've been able to keep our apprentices safe, keep our instructors safe, you know, following the guidelines by CDC, you know, wearing masks in class, you know, social distancing. As a matter of fact, we had to go out and buy a bunch of new furniture for our training centers, you know, smaller desks that we kind of, you know, move things around a little bit and kind of come up with some bigger classrooms to kind of keep everybody distanced. But, you know, we were able to, you know, to make it work. And we, you know, we've been back ever since. And, you know, so far, I guess, knock on wood, we haven't had one apprentice or any of our instructors get sick with COVID.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's talk about organizing. I saw on your website that you have a new director for organizing, Mr. Dan Martin. Maybe you could speak to what the game plan is for organizing. And that being said, I mean, there's a lot of organizing going on. We had the News Guild on yesterday, and they had a record year. I'm just wondering how that's working for you guys.
You know, when I was first elected in 2016, you know, it's one of the things that I laid out is, you know, I'm going to call it a vision for our, you know, our council is we're going to become, our focus is going to be on organizing. We're going to be an organizing union. And, you know, it's taken a while to get that up and running to where I think we're finally making some progress. Our new director of organizing, Dan, he's a longtime organizer in the field, and, you know, I decided to appoint him as, you know, heading up our organizing efforts. You know, we, for a long time, I think we've had a focus maybe too much on top, you know, a top-down organizing approach, talking to contractors, you know, non-union contractors about, you know, the benefits of, you know, partnering with us. And I think we've kind of shifted that focus more to a bottom-up organizing and actually getting out, talking to workers, you know, going to where they are, having conversations with them, seeing what's going on, and if there's something we can do to help them. So I think that, you know, it's a better approach, you know, bottom-up organizing. It's time-consuming. You have to be patient with it. You don't get results, obviously, right away, but I think you end up with a better end result when you actually sitting there talking to, you know, or workers. And obviously the workers are the ones that are going to drive any organizing campaign. And, you know, if they're not there with you, there's nothing you could do as an organizer that's going to make them, you know, want to be, you know, become a part of a union. So, you know, I think you have to sit there and you have to listen to the workers, you know, and help guide them. You know, and I think that's sometimes I think we lost sight of that a little bit, but I think we're getting back to it.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the politics there, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but you went through some changes in Wisconsin. Let's Absolutely. Be honest. When Walker was governor, the first thing out of the chute was let's attack unions. Collective bargaining for public sector. Right. Then you guys go right to work. I mean, how does that affect everything that you're trying to do, especially when it comes to organizing?
So, you know, when Walker was elected 2010, you know, when he took office in 2011, you know, in February, he come out with that, you know, his big plan to go after, you know, what he saw as, you know, the big labor people, you know, public sector workers. And, he, you know, he launched that piece of legislation that was designed to strip the rights, collective bargaining rights away from our public sector, you know, workers. You know, we have many at that time. We actually had quite a few public sector, you know, members working at University of Wisconsin, for example, as painters, glazers, that type of thing. So they were directly affected. So, you know, I was a business rep at the time. So we mobilized, especially in Madison. And that's what you saw for probably over a month, especially in Madison, was the Act 10 protests. And ultimately, you know, we ended up, it was like a once in a lifetime thing that it was great to be there. I don't know how much we ended up changing because we're kind of in the, you know, where we were back in 2011, as far as our public sector people. You know, we have to recertify our bargaining units every year, and it, you know, it gets harder and harder, you know, as you go on, you know, people don't see the value in staying with us. You know, we've done things on our end to try to make it so that it's easier for them to stay with us and they still have representation. But, you know, it's over time, it's gotten harder on the private sector. You know, when Walker decided in, I think it was 2015, that Wisconsin was going to be private sector, be going right to work state. You know, obviously nobody knew how that was going to go. Wisconsin has a long history of being a very, you know, pro-union state, and a lot of big things that, you know, came about in labor, you know, happened in Wisconsin first. So when we went to right to work, we didn't see any immediate impacts of, you know, right to work on our members, our membership or our union specifically. I think the bigger thing that had happened in 2015 was also the loss of our state prevailing wage. And I don't think at that time we really understood the, I guess, the impact that would have on our construction trades. And I think right now we're seeing the results of that specifically with not having a prevailing wage. Right to work, you know, I think it doesn't necessarily affect us that much. And I think we've approached it maybe a little bit differently than some of the unions. And I talk about that in a minute, but prevailing wage is the one thing that's really been hurting us hard because of what happens when you don't have that, and
right.
The kind of the environment and the climate that it'll create. That's hurt our industry quite a bit.
Now, is anybody trying to change that? I know you've got a Democratic governor there, but I believe the legislature is still pretty much against what the governor's trying to do. Is that right?
Yeah. So we had Democratic Governor Tony Evers, and we still have a Republican-controlled legislature. We were able to at least retain veto-proof. Not majority, but a veto-proof backstop for the governor, so that this was after the state budget or whatever, he can veto things, and the state legislature has a hard time getting around that veto. So we still have that, but we're as far as getting any pro-worker legislation through the legislature in Wisconsin, it's not going to happen. It's just they're dug in. They're not, not particular friends of labor, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I hear you. That's too bad. Jeff, I got to take a quick break. Mayor Hoff joining us on our live line. He's a business manager for the Painters and Allied Trades District Council 7. We're talking 9 locals, 108, 579, 770, 781, 802, 934, 941, 1011, and 1204. Website is IUPATDC7. When we come back, we're going to talk about the misclassification of workers in the construction industry. Big problem. That and more right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Millions retire online so they can do what they want offline. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast as well. Let's go back to our live line. Joining us from Wisconsin today is Jeff Mayerhoff. Jeff is the business manager and secretary treasurer for IUPAT District Council 7. Jeff, I want to talk about the misclassification of workers in construction. This is a huge issue, and it doesn't seem to be going away. I know it's been talked about. Some lawmakers have brought it up, but it's still a big problem. Let's talk about how it's affecting the painters and allied trades, especially in your area. What's the story, Jeff?
Well, thanks for bringing that up. So misclassification, like you just said, it's a huge issue, especially for certain trades, you know, in the building trades. And my trades are one of them, specifically drywall finishing and more painting. And, you know, it's always been in the backdrop. You have a little bit of that. But, you know, it really, we saw a huge increase in workers being misclassified in Wisconsin after prevailing wage was repealed in 2015. And, you know, we see, you know, the prevailing wages were originally put in place to basically protect your local workforce, your local businesses, your local contractors from out-of-state, out-of-state contractors, non-union typically from wherever, coming in and undercutting your wages and undercutting your ability to get the work, that was being put out by the state, like through universities or whatever the project is. They were put in place right. So that everybody bids at the same, the bidding at the same level. You know, the wages are going to be the same. And by removing that, it basically started. You know, it's like the Wild West here right now. You have people coming in all over. They're bidding on state projects that honestly they have no business trying to, they're in business doing that. They're not capable of doing the work. They don't have the manpower to do the work. So what they'll typically do is they'll get a project and then, in our case, when our painters and drywall finishers, it ends up being subbed out, subcontract. By the time, you get into the project, you don't even know, who these guys are. They don't know who they're working for. You know, a lot of times they're getting paid cash, not getting paid at all. I mean, it's just how legitimate contractors can compete with that. It's they can't, honestly. And I think it's one of our biggest issues in this. We've been trying to, get people to pay attention to the fact that, this is going on. It's going on right under your nose. And, the construction industry needs to step up and stop, make this stop. We can't do it by ourselves. Politicians created this issue, and we need people to, they need to step up and also help, because it's not just, not just hurting, our workers, it's hurting businesses as well.
And it's hurting the state coffers. How many workers are being paid under the table? Okay, you're paid under the table. Is that worker going to pay his or her taxes? Are they going to pay into Social Security? I mean, Medicare?
Nope.
I don't think so, right?
Absolutely not. Yeah, and that's why it's just so deteriorates your market. You don't have these guys that would normally pay into unemployment. They would be paying their state taxes, and the legitimate contractors, they still have to compete on that way. They're still paying their workers a living wage, and these guys that are coming in and with these business practices, they just don't care. And, it's just a huge problem. And it's just going to get worse unless, people really start taking it seriously.
Yeah. Politicians created it. Politicians need to fix it. No doubt. Jeff, if you don't mind, I want to get into communicating with your members, which is so darn important. And I know that you're trying to improve that through servant leadership. Can you explain what that's all about?
Well, I mean, it's kind of been a term. It's been around for a long time. And I started looking at, heard about the term and kind of researched it. It's like, well, servant leadership is just kind of what we should be doing on a daily basis for our members, anyway. It's really putting our members first. Sometimes I think as leaders, sometimes we get a little bit of lax and we, lose touch with our members. And I think it's something that's really, it's been on my mind for a long time, and trying to bridge that disconnect between leadership and members. And the only way to really do that is communicate with them. And, I think through servant leadership, that's helped us to kind of hopefully, bridge that disconnect. And we can't help our members if we don't know what they're, you know, what they're thinking, what's important to them. And so by, you know, really taking a step back and saying, you know, guys, as leaders, we're here as we're stewards of our union. We're here for a time. Hopefully we can improve it as we're here and leave it better for the next person to come along. But we're here to help improve the lives of our members. And that's what our job is every day. We're to help, we're helping people. And if we're not, you know, if we're not, that isn't our focus, and, you know, then what are we really doing? So, right. You know, I've really made that as, you know, one of the things that we work on every day. And, you know, I'm thinking we've had some success with it. I think our members appreciate that. I think that they see we're trying. And, you know, I would say that that's a huge thing under, you know, with right to work, because members, you know, they have it under right to work, right? They members always have a choice. But with right to work, it just makes it, you know, makes it a little bit easier for them to decide, well, you know, I'm just not going to be, I'm not going to be a part of this anymore. And so, you know, living under when we didn't have right to work in Wisconsin, and when we do, you know, I've kind of, it's kind of been able to see it. I don't know if there's ever a benefit, but I would say that we were able to see, we have to look at things a different way under right to work. And we have to be here for our members, and we have to show them the value of what it means to be a union member and be part of the organization, and why it's important to remain. And so I think that's kind of been a focus. And yeah, like I said, I'm hoping we've made some progress there. It certainly is something we look at every day.
Now, you represent 9 locals, as I mentioned. How many members are we talking about? Because this, I mean, communicating with so many members has got to be very difficult. How many members are we talking about in District Council 7?
Right now, we're right around 1,900.
Okay. All right. That's a chunk. That's a chunk of people. So you got quite a task here.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a huge responsibility, you know, to our members. And, you know, get up every day and get them, you know, what can we do to make sure our members are, you know, taken care of today? How are we doing? How are we growing our market share so we can kind of secure, you know, collective bargaining agreements, you know, the whole nine yards. And it's a huge responsibility, you know, because not only do our members depend on us, you know, their families depend on us doing our jobs. So, you know, it's something we take really seriously.
Jeff, there's one more issue here. We got a couple minutes left, and I just want to touch on this, and it has to do, and this is not comfortable to talk about, but it's called encroachment, where other unions try to take your members away. Is that an issue for District Council 7?
Yeah, I think it's an issue for, especially in Wisconsin right now, with the building trades as a whole. You know, you have, certain other labor unions decide, instead of focusing on organizing and improving their market share, it's easier to basically just, I don't want to say steal, poach, you know, members in, you know, in jurisdictions that aren't theirs, doing work that isn't, you know, that is something they normally do. You know, and I think there's enough out there, non-union people, that we could all be focusing on organizing instead of trying to, you know, go internally and attack each other. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me, and why at this point, you know, why that has to happen. I don't know, but it does happen. And it's just something that we talk about a lot. No, it isn't, but we have to acknowledge the fact that it's out there. And, you know, we need to be working together instead of against each other.
Gotcha. Oh, I hear you 100%. Well, I'll tell you got a tough job there, and it's unfortunate that the politicians, especially in Wisconsin and Michigan too, you represent people in Michigan.
Sure.
Michigan went right to work as well. So,
you
know, politicians should make your job easier, not more difficult. And unfortunately, that's not the case, especially in that area.
That's very true.
All right, Jeff, I'm going to leave it on that note. Anything else? Any parting words here for our audience right now?
No, I would just say thanks for having me on. I appreciate the talk, and you know, it's great to be here.
Well, we appreciate the Painters and Allied Trades. We're talking drywall finishers, painters, decorators, glazers, sign and display, trade show, and the trade shows got hit hard in the pandemic. Plus, those who do coatings and linings. So that's a big group there, and we need them.
Sure.
We need them to be happy. We need them to be working. IUPATDC7.com is a website. Okay, brother, you take care. Let's talk down the road, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, our segment with the American Federation of Government Employees, and we check in with the bricklayers in the state of Georgia. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.